Welcome to the Anthony and Sabga Caribbean Awards for Excellence podcast, the sound of Caribbean excellence. Here, we feature events, conversations, and interviews with our laureates in science, art, entrepreneurship, and civic activism from around the Caribbean. You may find us online at www.ansacaribbeanawards.com or on Facebook, or visit our YouTube channel, ANSCAFE, ANSCAFE. The last few years in the Caribbean have seen hurricanes growing in size and frequency, drought, temperature rise, and the consequent effects on economies, public health, and agriculture. The cause of these catastrophes is climate change, an issue which does not appear to be prominent in regional consciousness. But Professor Michael Taylor of the Climate Studies Group at the University of the West Indies, Mona, is changing that. Professor Taylor is also the Anthony N. Sabga Caribbean Awards for Excellence Laureate in Science and Technology for 2019. His mission started around the turn of the century, when the climate issue was beginning to come into focus.
Climate was becoming a big issue. And as it became a big issue and people began to realize the significant impact it was having, they also began to realize there was not enough information at the scale of the Caribbean islands or about the Caribbean. So there was climate information out there, but they would treat the whole Caribbean as a single entity and give, you know, single digit projections of what the temperatures will become for the entire Caribbean. But we know that the Caribbean has lots of sub-regional variations, and even within a country, the scale of the small islands, it has a lot of variation. So very quickly, I realized that we needed to put out information that was at the scale of the small islands of the Caribbean, and that was very contextually relevant. And so that was the direction in which I took the Climate Studies Group. So we began to do work, first of all, on what we call downscaling. Downscaling is, well, if I can take the outputs from these big global models that produce those large-scale results and somehow downscale them so that I can tell you what's happening in Barbados versus what's happening in Jamaica, and even downscale it further so that I can tell you what's happening in Western Jamaica versus what's happening in Eastern Jamaica, then suddenly the climate information becomes something that people can use.
Now, 2 decades into the 21st century, it's clear that the climate issue is crucial to the region's survival, and Professor Taylor's research is now invaluable.
We began to say, well, what climate really impacts our daily life. Can we figure out mechanisms to predict climate on seasonal and interannual scales? That required us to go back and now look on what are the things that cause climate in the Caribbean. And if we can begin to think through, you know, like, people will have heard of the El Nino effect, you know, and an El Nino has significant impact on climate in the Caribbean when it occurs. Well, if we can predict the El Nino, then it suddenly means that if we know the linkages between an El Nino effect and Caribbean climate, then we can now begin to predict Caribbean climate. And so it won't be that we are taken by surprise when that drought happens due to the El Nino. We, in fact, can warn and create the premise of early warning systems.
His research and data gathering reveal the effects of climate change, large and small, across the region.
Climate impacts us all in many ways, many other ways that we don't think about. It's our agriculture, it's our tourism, so it ultimately is your economic projections going forward. And more we expanded this data science side of the research, people began to ask us, well, this is great. How can I use it in terms of the sectors in the Caribbean, the things that are most impacted by climate? And we said, let's figure this out. And so we are now doing a lot of impact modeling. So we model, for example, the yields of cassava. You know, if I can tell you how the rain will change, and I can tell you what potentially what kind of yields you have. And I can tell you going forward into the future, to the end of the century, what is the likelihood that, you know, we will get good yields of cassava. And we look on damages models with our partners in economics, damage models, and we look on health, things like dengue and risk of vector-borne diseases. In terms of the manifestations of climate, significant drying across the Caribbean region. you know, probably 20% drier to 25% drier. So we would still have the variation, but we vary around the lower mean. In terms of hurricanes, the appearance of more intense hurricanes. So not necessarily more hurricanes, but when they come on the scene, they would be intense. Further sea level rise, clearly, and an expansion of really, really hot days, you know, those consecutive warm spells in the region. The other impact side says that would mean less hydropower. It would mean thermal stress for animals. Hence, you are now challenging food security. You know, it would translate perhaps into, with the more storms, more economic damages, that kind of thing.
But even though Professor Taylor's research is local, its effects are global.
I'm sure you might remember that the Caribbean very recently was at the forefront of the climate change movement in terms of what is the limit of warming that we can, the globe should experience. The Paris Agreement was signed, and the Paris Agreement is kind of a 2-degree agreement. It says by the end of this century, we shouldn't warm no more than 2 degrees by the end of the current century. That should bear in mind that we have already warmed 1 degree as a world. The Caribbean said 2 degrees is not enough. And the Caribbean, you know, with some other of the other least developed countries, put forward the concept that we can only warm by 1.5 degrees. And they put out a famous slogan, 1.5 to stay alive, you know, by the end of the century. If places like the Caribbean are to remain viable places to live.
Yet, even given this apocalyptic scenario and a growing awareness of the issue, what seems to be lacking is a sense of urgency to address climate change.
Climate change is moving at a faster pace than we are moving. The struggle the region has is that it has to be preparing for this slow onset, longer change that almost takes you by surprise when you suddenly realize that the norm has changed. While the region also has to prepare for the sudden onset, the possibility of that sudden onset as in a hurricane. It's difficult. This is a resource starved region, so to speak. So the region struggles to deal with the immediate, the challenge of the unpredictable of the immediate, while trying to deal with the challenge of the unprecedented that is to come, you know. And so the region is waking up, for sure. There are lots of institutions and entities now that take climate change very seriously and that are tackling different elements of that problem. Some, especially disaster risk community, are tackling the kind of variability that we see almost immediately. You know, some other entities, let's say the CARICOM's 5Cs, the Caribbean Community Climate Change Center, are trying to tackle some of the long-term planning. We're in various stages, and the extent to which we are doing this well is really a sense of how much resources that we have. What is obvious, though, is that we need a coordinated approach, both at the island scale and both at the regional scale.
So in the interest of exigency, a pressing question is, what can Caribbean societies, institutions, and individuals do?
In my mind, there's three types of action that the Caribbean has to move towards: the mitigation, adaptation, and education. One is clearly there is mitigation, because the truth is the climate is going to continue to change. That, of course, recognizes that the climate has already changed, you know, that we are already feeling the impacts of climate change. But the climate is going to continue to change, and simply because of the amount of greenhouse gases we are putting in the atmosphere. So in the climate change world, mitigation is reducing the thing that is causing it. Sometimes people tend to say, well, we are small islands and small contributors. The kind of reduction that we need in greenhouse gases globally does not exclude anybody. The only way is by some significant mitigation or reduction in greenhouse gases globally. Almost a 45% reduction in greenhouse gases, what we put out as a world. That cannot exclude the Caribbean and the Caribbean's responsibility. So one of our actions has to be mitigation. How would we mitigate? There are kind of four areas in which the Caribbean can mitigate. Look on what we use for energy, you know. And so we need to move towards renewable energy. Now, it contributes to the mitigation, but it's also a win-win for the Caribbean, you know, because renewable is what we have abundance of and freely, you know. So to our economies, that's a win-win situation. How else would we mitigate? Look at what we do with our green areas, our forests, you know, because forests pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, you know, and look at the protected areas, look at reforesting. Again, a win-win for us. We would mitigate by looking at waste, how we treat waste, you know, and that's an area that needs really strong attention in the Caribbean from the climate change perspective, but just from environmental perspective and transportation. The second kind of action that we need is adaptation. We can't know what we know from the body of science that has now been produced and sit down and say, well, we know what's coming and do nothing about it. And so the whole area of adaptation has been one of the significant areas that we take up in the Caribbean region. How will agriculture survive in an era of more variable rain, but also less rain? You know, do we need to move towards protected agriculture? Do we need towards move different strains or varieties of things that we plant that can handle the harsher conditions? But you know, and I use agriculture, but how will the water sector survive when we are so driven by rainfall right now? You know, do we need to clearly look at water harvesting? Do we need to look at our water policies and what we do with reusing water and recycling, you know, or do we need to move water across places? And you can begin to see that it trickles down, because if water needs to adapt, then health needs to adapt. You know, health is so driven by sanitation, you know, and the vector-borne diseases, the asthma. You can go right across the sectors, and every sector in the Caribbean needs to come up with an adaptation plan. And then, of course, the last kind of action I would argue for, which is something that we have been trying to move the group in the direction, is education. So it's mitigation, adaptation, and education. And education becomes critical because you have to engender behavioral change. You're asking people to adapt. You're asking people to change their way of life. Well, what is going to get them to do it? It can't always be done with a big stick and policy, you know. But if you let people see, wait, this is a serious thing. It's already impacting my life in significant ways. It's already impacting how much water I have, where my energy is, how much my energy bill is, you know, the ability of students to perform in school, you know. Then if they see that, then they will make the kinds of necessary changes that are needed.
Thank you for joining us. You may find us online at www.ansacaribbeanawards.com, on Facebook, or on YouTube.